champions. It's Angelina Jolie. Enjoy listening to The Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve. It's always the highlight of my day, and I had sex with Brad Pitt. It's saying a lot, guys. Enjoy the show.
No, we're glad to have you along, and thank you for joining The Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve. Let's get ready to go for another great podcast, Stephen.
Indeed. Are we dating ourselves by referencing Angelina Jolie? Is she still on the hottie list?
Yeah, dude. She's, yeah. I mean, come on. Angelina Jolie? What are you talking about? Is she still on the hottie list?
I haven't seen her in a while. The other day, I tried to reference some generic hot woman, and I said Cindy Crawford. I'm just like, boy, is that getting a dated reference right there? I feel like those two are pretty close.
No, no. Cindy Crawford was 80s, dude. Angelina Jolie, late 90s all the way up through at least 2010 was a big thing.
All right. I'll go along with that.
She's Laura Croft.
Yeah, when did Tomb Raider come out? Early 2000s?
No, maybe like 2010, dude.
I don't think so.
Let me ask. When did Tomb Raider come out? Tomb Raider was published in 1996. That, so it had to come out in the movies like in, you know, 2003, 2004, 2001.
I beat you to it. Either way, listen, find all that stuff and so much more on the interweb, including our website. We'll get into whether or not we're old in a moment, but thevocalminority.net. And if you're still on AOL dial up, then you're definitely too old. So
Yeah, but we welcome all. Call our comment line. Make a comment on the show. 844-48-VOCAL, our webpage, thevocalminority.net. And continue to download the podcast because we love it.
Yeah, the podcast available everywhere, which apparently you know if you're listening to this. But find the social medias and share, comment, like, etc. YouTube, Reddit, TikTok, our favorites. But we're on the Facebook stuff, Instagram threads, and Blue Sky. So Blue Sky, yes, won't you?
Please, Blue Sky, yes.
Hello.
And thank you for being here.
Thank you. Yes.
You're very welcome. So, yeah, Nick and I both are officially knock, knock, knocking on 50's door. You know, 49 now. You still feeling young and hip?
Yeah, I mean, I feel great, dude. I mean, not every day, but, like, just in general, I feel great, you know, about my age.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out if we are the exception to the rule, if we're slightly younger in spirit and hipper than the average 49-year-old, or is it just the thing that, you know, when you're in your 20s, you think 40-somethings are older. When you hit 40, you think 60-somethings are old. Like, do we just keep moving the bar?
We keep moving the bar. And let me tell you this, as sad as this might sound to you, that there is a guy that you're shopping next to, pushing your cart in Raley's. He's wearing khakis and New Balance, and, you know, he's a dork. And he goes home and tells his kids, like, I'm still jiving. I'm still hip. I'm still cool. Like, so I don't think that we're alone in feeling this way. But right. Are we the same as him?
No, that's the problem. Listen, I've got some New Balance shoes, and I think they're perfectly comfortable and fine. And I use them to work out, where I sweat profusely, and I'm building up muscles. And listen, I hang out and associate with a lot of other parents in our age range. I go to school functions and events, and 90% of them are that dork in the khakis and New Balance. And no, they are not cool and hip, and they may think they are, but they are not. But look at us. We're podcasters and radio guys, and we play guitar, and we go do cool things, riding dirt bikes and collecting watches or whatever, you know?
I'm just going to listen to you on this one, dude. These are just questions you can ponder of, like, you know, are we the idiots who are like, grow up, man, you guys are lame, or are we just as great as we think we are as human beings?
Well, perception is reality, so obviously we're awesome.
Right, okay.
So there you go. But I did come across one of our articles here talking about Gen Xers. And, you know, we've talked on this show before about this younger generation that they seem to bounce around jobs a lot. They simply don't show up to work a lot. They don't have a strong work ethic. I've told my kids, just show up and you will rise above 80% of your coworkers. And that's not entirely new, but I do feel it's more relevant than ever.
Yeah, I would too. I mean, even when we say it though, Steve, I feel like that these stupid kids don't want to show up for work. Like, I feel that way when I say it, but at the same time, I know it's true. I see it everywhere.
Yeah. I know there's always been threads of all of this. And I'll tell you another indicator, though, that we are cooler and hipper than either the average 49-year-old or just the generational thing. Because every generation always says that their music is the best and what the kids are listening to nowadays is terrible, right?
Sure, sure.
I can remember being in high school listening to, like, Pearl Jam's 10 album. And I literally had a chat with a buddy of mine back then that this music will stand the test of time. Like, we're listening to something great. That much like we listen to Zeppelin or something, the next generation will listen to Pearl Jam and this stuff will stand the test of time.
For sure. No, I agree with that. And I, listen, I'm not saying that there's no current artists that are great, but stand the test of time like Nirvana and Pearl Jam, Beatles and Zeppelin, Stones. Like, I don't know if we're seeing any of that. Maybe Taylor Swift. And that's not my opinion, but it seems to be a lot of the country's opinion.
And listen, time will tell. But the indicator I'm referencing is the fact that I now have a 15-year-old son who is really getting into music. And he came to me recently and said, like, you have turned me on to really good music, Dad. Metallica. Pearl Jam, like he's getting into The Offspring on his own, like stuff that if our generation's music sucked, he should be making fun of. Like, my parents were into Barbra Streisand and Barry Manilow, okay? That can be ridiculed and mocked, and I don't know that it's really stood the test of time. But yeah, the bands we were into are still selling albums, they're still relevant, and to see the next generation being like, yeah, freaking Metallica rocks, Pearl Jam's amazing. Like, that does say something.
Yeah, no, you're right. It does, for sure. We knew when we were going through the evolution of music and grunge that that music would not only stand the test of time, but it would influence music for years to come. And it has done just that. So,
yes. Now, I will say some of those singers have not been able to stand up or test of time. Like, so sad to me. The Seattle supergroups. Pearl Jam, Eddie Vedder is the only singer still alive. Chris Cornell's gone. Lane Staley's gone. Kurt Cobain's gone. Like, these people kind of shot themselves in the foot in some ways, but the music does live on.
Or in the head. It is a truth that rock and roll is a hard life. And yeah, I mean, live fast, die young, right?
Right. If you've got the rock and roll work ethic, you should be dead by 27, apparently.
So. Yeah.
But yeah, so anyways, I hear a lot about the workforce out there and the different generations, how they're doing. And I hear a lot of people saying, you know, jobs, even though the unemployment rate is low, like it's hard to find work out there. So stumbled across this article saying that there's a list of reasons why no one wants to hire Gen Xers anymore. Gen Xers, we're on the list now?
I think so, dude. I mean, we had to get here at some point, but I'll be really curious to know why. I look at the baby boomers. Is that the next one after us?
I think so, if not close enough. Yeah.
Yeah, I look at them and I've heard about them saying like, oh, it gets really hard to become employable when you're in your 50s, you're 55 or whatever. And I always thought, oh, that's ageist. That sucks. But it's definitely true. So if we're walking into this corridor now of not being hired, I fear for my life.
Yeah. And Gen X, I did look it up just to confirm, like we're on the tail end of it, but anyone born between 65 and 80 are Gen Xers. So Nick and I in the mid 70s, we're on the tail end of it. So there is a group that's about 10 years older than us, so they'd be in their late 50s, but you know, still 40s, 50 somethings. That's still pretty young and active out there.
Yeah. Let's see what's on here, dude. I will fight to the death.
Right. The first one on here is something that I have been... I don't think retirement is an option for me anytime soon, but I do realize there are people in our age demo that are getting ready to retire if they're able to do it on the earlier end. And the first reason on this list is they don't want to hire Gen Xers because they fear they're going to be retiring soon.
Hmm. That's interesting. Yeah, that would be, I would think that that's mainly, what'd you say it started in 68?
65 to 80. Yeah.
Okay, so 65. Yeah, I mean, they're retiring now for sure. But like us, I'm not retiring anytime soon. Like if you hire me right now, prospective employer, like you've got at least a decade, if not more.
Right. Yeah. And it's funny, the first line in this little article says most Gen Xers are terrified they'll never be able to retire.
Isn't that true?
Yes. Yes, it is. So I agree with you. Hire me. And yeah, I don't think I'm going anywhere anytime soon. But yeah, that just seems unrealistic and unfair that we're close to retirement. We're not in our 60s or certainly in the 70s. And most people don't retire by 55. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, I think it's starting to happen now with the haves and the have-nots because of like the Silicon Valley, all the tech boom and stuff like that. Like, I know there's a lot of people in their late 40s, early 50s retiring, but like when we were growing up, like you worked until you were 65 and hoped you could retire then, you know?
Right. Kennedy, my lovely girlfriend, is coming up on 30 years on her job, and she's got one of these jobs that has a 30-year pension.
Nice.
But even she has said, like, okay, I'm eligible to retire in a couple of years, but I don't see myself just not working. Like, I'll either continue on with my current job in some fill-in capacity, or maybe I'll go do something entirely new, because obviously, if she retires at age 55, like we just said, there's still a lot of work years left in your life.
Yeah, and that's a lot of time you got to make up for. Like, that's the time, like, from between 55 and 65, like, if you're saving for retirement or you've got a 401k, those last 10 years of that are really important for compounding interest. And if you throw that 10-year chunk away, like, you lose a lot. So, yeah, I get that. The pension's great, but she's going to want to keep doing something. If you don't use it, you lose it. Right. Well,
and that's the other side of things. On one level, I have this fantasy of sitting around doing nothing, but I don't think I could just stop working. Even when I hit 65 or 70, I'm going to want to do something that's still workish.
Yeah, look, my dad did till the day he died. Your dad still doing stuff. I mean, you know, a lot of people do that. And I think that you can use a little discretion with how much you're making and stuff like that. Maybe do something you enjoy more, like Kennedy's talking about. But yeah, people don't just stop working.
Yeah. The next reason on this list is preposterous to me and insulting in so many ways, that the reason Gen Xers don't want to, you know, or people aren't hiring Gen Xers right now, they're overqualified. Generation X has decades of occupational experience under the belt, which employers should view as a good thing. Instead, businesses are unwilling to pay for experience in a suitably qualified role.
And yeah, I think that's the truth, dude. I really do. I mean, it used to be like, oh, yeah, you go in for a job, and if you've got the experience, you know, you're going to get the job. But it's not that way anymore because people think, oh, I don't want to pay those salaries, and we can train them to do this. We'll get them there, you know, in no time. It doesn't work, but yeah.
Yeah. And what about this notion of a college degree? You know, we need a college degree for this job. And as I have been thinking about some of this stuff recently, a college degree of mine would be from the 90s. Like, is that even relevant? Any industry has changed infinitely since I would have gotten a college degree.
This is a weird one because for people that don't have a college degree, I'm not saying that all those people, because I'm one of them, that were stupid. But there is a lot of people that don't have college degrees that have failed to study and gain knowledge on their own that have become stupid. When Rachel talks to me all the time, she's like, I don't necessarily look for a college degree for, you know, oh, I got my bachelor's of arts, you know. It's not for the job, but I want to know that you have put your nose in a book and learned about the way this country was developed and what happened. You know, like, I want you to know some things. Like, that's important.
Listen, that's fair. I understand that there's a work ethic to getting that degree, but Kurt Cobain would have still been alive when you and I would be getting these college degrees. So I just sort of question what the relevance is. I have noticed a lot of industries nowadays say college degree or 5 years equivalent work experience. That makes way more sense.
Sure. Yeah. For the work experience side of it. Well, look, we both went to school. I went to college for a couple of years. I learned so much more on the job training than I ever did in college.
Of course. I have told my kids repeatedly college degrees have become way overvalued. First of all, the notion of going to an Ivy League school or whatever is ridiculous. Unless you're in that top tier, you want to be a Harvard lawyer, work for some firm that only hires, yeah, blah, blah, blah. Most degrees, they just want to see what you just said. Like, did you manage to stick it out and get a degree? Like, you don't need to go so deeply in debt. And yeah, the actual value of a degree is way overstated, because once you get your first real job, no one really cares anymore what your degree was in. They want to know, where'd you work in the industry? Which one of my competitors did you go learn at? Or what skills from the real world do you have? Not did you get some freaking degree in travel and tourism, or Bachelor of Arts or whatever it is, you know?
We were in a weird time in all this, because when we were younger kids, like, college was a privilege. It wasn't something that everybody did, and that's the only way you could get a job. But when we got older and we got into our 20s and then late mid-20s, people were saying, like, we only hire people with college education. So we were there without college educations. I used to tell Rachel, I don't understand why you can't just lie. Like, say, yeah, I got a college degree from so and such university. She was like, you should never do that. I was like, why? Why? If they don't really care, they just want to know I got a college degree, why can't I lie about it? Because we were in radio. Radio stations started being like, college degrees only. Like, are you serious?
Right. Listen, it's super common that people lie on their resumes, because most employers will never fact check something like that. And also, by the way, I mean, I know this is going to make us sound old, but any college degree you would have gotten in the early 90s is pre-internet, pre a lot of people doing electronic databases. So I would challenge you to call a college and say, hey, in the year 1992, can you pull up someone's record and confirm if they were even at the college? Like, and I don't even know if they can do that if an employer just calls. So, yeah, I'm not encouraging people to lie on their resume, but people do it all the frickin' time. And most employers are either too lazy or just unable to fact check most of it.
Completely. George Santos got away with it for a long time. He was, you know, an elected representative.
Right. And it's only until you become so public that someone would even bother fact checking that stuff.
Right.
Most people will just give you the benefit of the doubt. And if you do the job fine, no one even cares. So
just learn the school fight song, dude. That's all you need to do.
Right, exactly. Let's see. More reasons Gen Xers can't get hired nowadays. They're stereotyped as tech resistant. Where the hell does that come from? We're very tech savvy. We grew up in the age of computers. We grew up in the internet. Just on the tail end of internet becoming a thing. But how are we not tech savvy? Computers and video games and all that stuff have been in our lives for almost all of it.
Listen, we're the only generation that knows how to do both, right? Like, I mean, we know how to live pre-internet with the Thomas Guide, and we know how to get on MapQuest. We know how to use a GPS. Like, dude, we learned all that stuff. It was at our fingertips as we were 19, 20 years old.
Yeah. I don't get it. This article says Gen X is often deemed as being bad with technology as they didn't grow up with the same technology of today, I guess. But Gen X was there when the old magics were created. They learned on DOS, watched the rise of Microsoft, and helped pioneer social internet as we know it. Unfortunately, though, employers worry that Gen X workers may be harder to train or will struggle to adapt to digital technology. Like, the generation above us, absolutely. But no, like you said, we've been here for the evolution of all this stuff. So I think we would actually be easier to train.
Well, think about this, though. Like, our old producer would fall into this Gen X space, and he was completely like, I'm not getting on TikTok. I'm not learning to do that. Like, he was, if you're adverse to technology and you're not going to open yourself up to it, well, then that's on you. But you can't label us as a generation like that.
No. I know some of us may be crotchety old men on the front porch in our robes yelling at the kids to get off the lawn like he was, but please, not tech savvy.
Come on, dude.
How about this? Again, this is sort of a backhanded compliment in some ways. Gen X actually has obligations outside of work. Companies refuse to provide a work-life balance are often resistant to hiring Gen X because, you know, we have like relationships and children and other hobbies and things we would like to do outside of work. Apparently that makes us bad to hire.
Listen, I call bullshit, right? Because we are the generation who ignored all that shit and work right through all of it. Oh, we are the generation that don't know our children because we work long weeks. And, you know, the kids that you're hiring today have also a mindset of I require work-life balance and I will dictate what work-life balance looks like. We didn't have that option. So what are you talking about?
Yes. I feel like a lot of this is unfair, including the next thing, which we just sort of got into. They say the Gen Xers' experience outweighs their education. Common sense would indicate that actually doing the job for many years would provide more qualifications than that printed degree. But some hiring managers, though, have different perceptions of what a degree actually brings to the table. Are we interviewing with 22-year-olds fresh out of college? Because that's the only one that would say something like that. Obviously, real-world experience is infinitely more valuable.
Of course. Of course, dude. Unless you're talking about being a doctor or a lawyer or something that requires, you know, teachings like that. But, yeah, for business, for sales, you know. But like
even a doctor or a lawyer, we went through the school, we got those degrees, and now we've spent years actually doing it.
Sure. Yeah, you have both, I suppose. But, yeah, this is doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
I think this article is written by a 17-year-old is what I'm picking up on.
Could be.
Gen Xers are perceived as uninterested in professional development. Gen X is often considered uninterested in furthering their professional education, but are simultaneously not offered opportunities for upping their skills due to their age. Boy, the catch-22 we're in.
I got to say that I kind of understand that. Like, I do kind of understand that. Like, I'm at an age now where I don't want to definitely go do a lot of shifts. You know, I don't want to go board up a Saturday show. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to work my way up somewhere. I'm not looking for an investment like that. Like, been there, done that. If I don't have that, I'll just do something different altogether. So that's a little bit me.
It's interesting. They're perceived as uninterested in professional development. I have a hard time with that. Because you and I have worked together for years and we have adapted to all the changing environments and technology and editing software and contracting systems and all that stuff. Like, I don't know. We didn't resist going paperless. We didn't resist the new technologies of editing and all that.
No, I don't think so. But for professional development, like, I'm developed, dude. You know, I'm already developed. I'm not looking for you to develop me. I'm already developed. I don't want a lot of training. But if it's a new software program, obviously I'm going to learn it. That's an obvious one, right?
Yeah. No, our eggs have hatched, and yeah, there's an immense amount of value in that, which unfortunately brings me to the next thing on this list. Yeah, we have a lot of value in our experiences, but salary requirements are why they don't want to hire Gen Xers, because we actually have things that we have to pay for.
Right.
We don't have the option of moving back home and often have the added pressure of needing to care for either aging parents or children, or we simply can't afford to take a job in which the salary only covers the bare minimum. I mean, yeah, that was a privilege of being in my 20s that, you know, $22,000 a year, like that was my first full-time job and it barely covered my bills. But yeah, do you want people with experience and qualifications or do you only want to hire 17-year or 18-year-olds that can live off nothing?
I think there's got to be a happy medium to it. But, it sucks that we've got all this experience and now people don't want to pay for it. Like, that was something that we were working towards of, like, I want to be a person who can go in and demand this salary because I have that much experience. I'm that good at my job. And now they just don't want to pay it.
Yeah. I mean, you get what you pay for. And if you treat employees well, they will stick around. And if you're paying them well, they may actually work into their older age and past retirement, et cetera, et cetera. But what a catch-22. You know, radio, I've seen this a lot, and it happens a lot of other industries. Like, when profits start shrinking, they try to find ways to increase your profit margins. And usually they go to payroll, because payroll is one of the few areas where you can cut, because the electric bill's not going to just go down or
right.
Licensings or anything else you're paying for. But you can only cut payroll so far before you completely shoot yourself in the foot and just implode. Because now you got a bunch of slackers who don't give a crap about their job anymore because you're slowly suffocating them.
Yes. Radio is an interesting one, though. You know, we have to look past radio because I will tell you that I spent the majority of my radio career being underpaid. I think I only had one job in radio where I was like, they're paying me what I feel like I might be worth. And radio's weird, right? But other jobs, like there is a level of, oh, this is, I've been an accountant for this long. I have these certifications. That person makes $45,000 or $60,000 a year, where radio is kind of all over the place. So I get it more in radio, but in jobs where you have training to do a specific thing and you're just like everyone else, it's not personality based. Those levels are set, should be locked in. Yeah. If I have the experience, I should make that.
Yeah, for sure. There are some industries that are like that. I know the education world, you know, there's just set standards per state or whatever, but
yeah,
I don't know. I was watching some interview recently, one of those guy podcast things where they bring on like porn stars and gold diggers. And they asked this panel of women, like, what do you think the average man in America makes? And, you know, what would you require of your partner?
Yeah.
They were all like, well, I require six figures, obviously, if not more. And I think the average guy in America probably makes, I don't know, 150 grand a year.
Wow.
And the interviewer is like, the average salary in America is $32,000 a year. And
right.
These women's heads exploded of like, how could you live on that? Who makes that little? And no way would I date someone making that.
The majority of the country makes that little.
Right.
So, yeah, that's crazy.
But yeah, obviously certain higher end jobs, like I don't see how you're going to keep a company functioning. I guess this brings me to the last one on the list here. Ageism exists in the workplace. While technically illegal, ageism still permeates workplaces, even if it's implicitly. Older employees can often be viewed as out of touch, unenthusiastic, or as having family obligations that would prevent them from, you know, meeting the business goals. Now, listen, my mom is into her 80s and she's been working, you know, ever since. And I know she was telling me in her late 70s that people were saying that ageism was a factor and that, you know, minimum job she could do. I mean, she had to be a greeter or work the counter or something, but
sure.
Ageism against people in their 40s or 50s? What the hell, man? Come on.
Right? It's a real thing. I mean, listen, I will tell you this, that I know my brother, who is, I believe he's 62 now. From his mid-50s, he was out of a job for a while looking for work. And he was like, it's a freaking bitch out there, dude. They don't want to hire an old guy. They just don't want to. And I have somebody in my life now who's job hunting. I think he's 53. And he said, I have definitely noticed it's different getting hired at this age.
Wow. I can't believe those realities are ours to deal with.
I know. I know.
I would think we'd be the, I mean, you're not hiring us for entry level work, obviously, but you still need someone to manage the shop. You need someone with work and life experience to be somewhere on those upper tiers. And just like in radio, when someone gets hired for another job, that opens up one job, and then people, like, it's a whole ripple effect. So what the hell? How could people in their 40s or 50s not be highly valued?
Yeah, I don't know. It's, like you said, ageism is a real thing, and it seems weird that it would show up mid-40s, mid-50s. And I think we're kind of at a sweet spot where we're still employable. But when you get over 50 by a year or two, I know that I've heard from personal experience of people that you start having issues, that you really start noticing, like, yeah, this is different when I show up to an interview now.
It's crazy. I've said for years, like, if things just fall apart, I need a little extra money. Like, I'm just going to go deliver pizzas again. It's what I did in my late teens, early 20s. Fun job. Not too hard. You drive around listening to music. But yeah, I could see myself walking into a pizza place and then being like, what are you, 50? Like, no, we can't hire you for some entry-level minimum wage job. That seems weird.
Well, I delivered pizzas maybe 5 years ago, right? You remember I did it for a short time just to get and make some extra money, get out of the house a little bit. I definitely felt like the old guy in the room, you know. That's not to say people didn't love. I mean, people loved me at that job, dude. The stories that I told, the life experience that I had, like those kids love listening to that shit. But I'm sure they walked out and got in their car. It was like crazy old fucker. Right. You know, like I was an old man.
Old man Reynolds.
Old man Reynolds at it again.
When I did deliver pizzas at like age 18, 19, 20, you know, we did have a dad that worked there. You know, and his kids were my age. And he did it because his wife controlled the purse strings. And his wife told him, like, you want to buy baseball cards, you go get some other job. Like, he had a real full-time job. And he would deliver pizzas on a Friday or Saturday night because he made a little extra money, got him out of the house. He liked driving around. But yeah, we all did think it was kind of weird that there was a dad working there with the rest of us who were all in bands or, you know, doing some 19-year-old thing in life.
You want to talk about awkward, dude, as I will tell you that I didn't ever feel, well, that's not true. For the most part, I never felt awkward around the dudes, you know, that I was working with. But the young 16, 17-year-old girls, I almost immediately felt like, oh, the creepy old man that delivers pizza.
Yeah, isn't that interesting how that just feels creepy and wrong to you? But there are so many guys that would be like 18-year-olds, hell yeah.
Yeah. That's a great, interesting topic. I don't know how much I agree with a lot of it, but not all of it. I'll say that.
Well, it worries me for, yeah, what lies ahead in the work world for us.
Hey, talking about rolling forward into a new life, a new world, you and I are both doing a bit of that, not only with this podcast, but other areas in our lives. You've made comment on the show a couple of times as of late, that you've got a few projects that you're working on all at the same time. And yeah, there's been a little worry with the people that care about you that maybe you're headed towards burnout. I mean, you've really been working the midnight oil.
Fair. Yes. I have multiple endeavors out of this little home studio that as of right now I'm enjoying. But yeah, I spend, I don't know, 10, 12 hours a day in this little room. It's all doing work I like, but I do feel it stretching me thin a little bit, and I do feel I'm dropping the ball here and there. And yeah, some people are worried, but
The only reason I would even dare to bring it up, because I think you're doing great work. Have I mentioned that? I think you're doing great work.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
That's, I mean that as true, you know, like I think you're doing good stuff. It's because I came across an article that I thought, oh, that's funny. I'm a burnout expert. These personality traits put you at high risk. And I thought, let's see if Steven and myself, I mean, let's see if we are at high risk for burnout.
Right. Yeah, I will tell you, like running the radio station as I did for all those years, I had a few older dudes who had done my job previously in like the late 80s or the 90s, Paul, Tony, that came to me and was like, listen, Harness, I see you going fast and furious, and that's all good. I did the same thing at your age. I also had my first heart attack at age 51 or 55. And so slow yourself down. And my work ethic has always just rejected that on principle. So I'm assuming I probably will be on this list in some capacity. But I feel I'm invincible, so I'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm glad you feel that way, dude. I will say, you found some ways to take your time. Well, you may not take that time every day, but you've found some hobbies or things you enjoyed doing is where you've taken your time. So,
spot on. I'm also working out regularly, which both of those gentlemen never did. And yes, I do make sure I set aside dirt bike time and playing guitar and hanging out with Kennedy. And, you know, so I think I'm balancing it, but who knows? That's what everyone says until they have the first heart attack, right?
Yeah, that's right. And there is a little difference here that you need to know that we'll learn from this expert. You've likely already heard of burnout as a condition. The National Health Organization describes it as a state of physical and emotional exhaustion. That's what burnout is. The issue is not the same as stress. It's recognized by the WHO as an occupational phenomenon, meaning it has to do with the pressures, stresses, and demands of work, okay?
Okay. I mean, on one level, I feel like if you're not feeling burnt out, you're not working hard enough, slacker.
Okay. Well, let's see where we all fall on this. This is said that about 34% of adults in the UK, and while it might be dismissed as normal work stress, the condition is linked to depression. 34% experience burnout in the UK. And a lot of people like yourself say, oh, that's normal. It's work. It's stress. You know, get over it. But yeah, this is linked to depression, dude, and we have a high suicide rate around all around this world like we've never seen before.
I don't think any of my relationships were work, because those are what led to depression and suicide a lot. I don't know. I never was like, boy, I'm on the radio so much, I'm going to go jump off a building. But I have been like, this woman is driving me freaking insane. I'm going to jump off a building.
Some of those relationships, I saw you put a lot of work in, dude. They were work. So
yes, yeah, unpaid internships, you could call them. Yeah.
See if you're at a very high risk for burnout based on your personality. Okay. The biggest thing, and this is really going to blow your socks off, the biggest thing is it's the caregiver personality. It's the high achieving type A personality. It's the one who has ever felt imposter syndrome. Okay. It's the one that's seeking perfectionism, people pleasing at their core is most dangerous for burnout. I would say that the things that I just listed, I mean, there's a few of them that you are, for sure.
Yeah, a few I am, a few I'm not, though. I don't know that I've ever had the imposter syndrome. I know some people feel like they don't deserve what they've gotten, or they're not qualified for the job. Like, there have been times in life, because we do fun things in our career, where I'm like, I can't believe I'm working in Seattle radio on top of a high rise and the space needle's out the window. Like, I feel like on one level it's been too good to be true, or I can't believe I achieved this, but I never thought like I don't deserve this. I felt like I worked damn hard and I of course deserve these opportunities, but I always pinched myself a little. Yeah.
You never thought in any position or job that we ever did or that you ever did by yourself that like, when do they find out that I'm a fraud? Like, yeah, I'm not completely qualified for this.
Well, there's the old fake it till you make it. And I always make it before anyone figured out that I was faking it. So, you know, I mean, I was the youngest general manager in the history of the company that owned the radio stations back in the day. And on one level, I thought, like, I can't believe I pulled this off. Like, they actually hired me for this job. And I came from programming, not sales, which is usually what management comes from. But no, I busted ass to get those jobs, and I earned the credibility to get those jobs. So I never had the imposter thing, but perfectionism and some of the other things you listed there, like, I guess, you know, I've struggled with what the difference is between being a perfectionist and just having a high standard of work, like holding yourself to a certain level of accountability. I don't actually think I'm a perfectionist. I do expect a lot, though, out of my work product.
How do you define the difference? And I'm not saying you're wrong, because I agree with you, but how do you define the difference from being a perfectionist and just having, high expectations?
I'm sure there's some clinical definition out there, but I think a perfectionist, it's never enough. You never did it well enough. You always could have done better. And on one level, I've never given myself a 10 on a scale of 1 to 10. I always say a 9 is as high as I would have given myself. You've got to leave some room for improvement. But
sure.
But no, there's times where I feel like I could have maybe done more. But I don't think I strive for actual perfection.
I'm not talking personal life, but in work life, do you feel like you demand it from others that are working with you or for you?
No. I want everyone to do their best. And I've always said, like, if you make a mistake, it's fine as long as you learn from it. So I don't think you can expect perfection if you're also willing to let people make mistakes and learn from it.
And I think that describes you exactly. Like, yeah, I want your best. I want you to do your best. But, like, yeah, if you make a mistake, like, we'll figure out what to do. So that's good that you don't strive for complete perfectionism, because that puts you at high risk on this list. And you already do have a couple. First of all, you have a caretaker mentality. You've talked about that in your therapy and tried to try and figure that out.
Mm-hmm. I believe I had a recent epiphany. I'm doing this parts work in therapy, where our brain essentially has different parts of it. They're all us, but some parts are the creative, some are the intellectual, and some of these parts can be every different age. You can have a young, optimistic romantic who's basically 15, locked in at that age. I've had this critical adult in my world that is always kind of coming down on me. And I've always envisioned that person as being me, but older. And I recently realized, I think that critical adult is actually my dad. Like, that's why he looks like me and is older. Like, so, yeah, some of these things have always been floating around. And I think identifying it helps to a certain extent, but doesn't get rid of it.
That's interesting. Here's a great question. Why are we so affected by our dads, first of all? And follow-up question, do you worry about affecting your son how you were affected?
Yeah, it's tricky because for doing some of this therapy, I didn't think my dad had any real weight on my brain or didn't really shape me that much because I think we're really different types of, you know, of men. But through some of this work, I've started to realize, like, you know, my dad was never critical, but he did say once, you know, it would be disappointing if I did this. And he did comment when I was in my 20s about the way I and then I realized, like, he just said a week ago the way I dress, you know, was still a disappointment to him. And I'm like, I was kind of in denial about the impact he had had because I was never able to zoom out far enough to see the steps over the course of my life and how maybe that's made me sensitive now when someone brings up the way I dress or my career opportunities and I don't want to disappoint people because I don't want to let people down. And I start to realize all this traces back. And I've been conscious about it with my kids, but the other thing I've learned is you have no way of knowing what random comment, what random lesson you teach your kids is going to weigh on them in a way you never saw coming or never intended.
You're so right. And that's, you're in a minefield, really. One you can't control. You know, you could do your best to not make the mistakes that you know you are making. But like you said, this is something my dad said to me that I've worked out in therapy that I know it affected my whole life. Okay. Yeah, it still affects me and I've gotten over it, I think. My dad, no matter, well, this I should say, that I did get past this with my dad into my later years in life. But when I was a kid growing up, no matter how great I did, my dad would always congratulate me. But it was very quickly followed up by, next time, maybe you can do this. It was never enough. Yeah. We could never celebrate this victory for very long. And that affected me well into my older age.
Yeah. Listen, there are some classic pitfalls that I think a modern day parent can avoid. You can't avoid all of them because, like I said, you could try to do something good or something wise and it just hits the kids differently. But one of the classic sort of bad parenting techniques or lessons is if your kid comes to you and they got a 98 out of 100 on the test, a bad parent will say, why'd you miss two? Not, congrats on getting a 98. Oh, that's amazing. The negative parent will be like, 98? Why'd you miss two then if you're so smart? Like,
right.
So there's pitfalls like that you can just avoid, you know?
Yes. And that's why it was so confusing with my dad because he would celebrate it. That's great, Nikki. Maybe next, but then it would always go into, and I know he was only trying to get me to better myself, keep getting better.
I was just going to say, his motives were good. He thought he could push you. You got a 98, surely you can get 100.
Yeah.
But it weighs on you in ways you don't realize as that kid, and the way my dad commented on my clothing and my hair back then, like it is still weighing on me. Him trying to force me to love fish by telling me, you're not leaving that table until you finish that fish. I sat there for 2 hours, finished the fish, hated fish the rest of my life.
Right, yes. And you know, the fact that you're thinking about that, that's what I don't get, dude. Like, why are our fathers, and why are you as a father so powerful?
Yeah, no.
It's crazy.
Yeah, no, parents are influential like that. Here's a funny example of something I did for Crosby that I thought was being an awesome dad, and it backfired on me. You know what the elf on the shelf is?
Yeah, yeah. It's you put the elf on the shelf at Christmas time and move him around to wake up to each morning, right?
Exactly. And a lot of creative parents on this elf on the shelf era, which never existed when we were kids, we'll do these elaborate scenes where the kid will wake up and the elf is – you know, playing poker with the Nutcrackers, or I've had, you know, swinging from the rafters. I did a whole Harry Potter scene once with the floating candles from Harry Potter. I tied them to fish lines, so it was, you know, candles were like,
wow.
I really got into it for a while there of I'm going to make these elaborate scenes. And one day I did this scene where I took the Thomas tank, the Thomas engine, the little train thing. I had a little train track, and I had the engine on the train, and I had all of my Spider-Man action figures. They were all lined up around the train track, and they had tied the elf on the shelf and put him on the train track, and Thomas the Tank Engine was coming towards the elf, and all the Spider-Man had their hands up in the air and were cheering. And it was hilarious.
No, or was it?
And my son later told me that I freaked the hell out of him, that the Spider-Man came to life and kidnapped the elf on the shelf and tied him up and wanted him to die. And he was scared for years of those Spider-Men. I thought it was hilarious. I scarred the kid.
Yeah, that's it. You got to be so careful, apparently, dude.
Yes.
But these are all things, you know, the things that I guess fathers and mothers can say to us as kids growing up that really shape us and give us our work ethic by watching how they worked. And hopefully we'll get some of it right with their pitfalls. But you've got a couple things on the list, as do I, that are good possibilities for burnout. This is how I can tell if you are burning out right now. These are a few things that I'll ask you these questions. And if you say yes to them, we should call a doctor. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm seeing one regularly. So.
You are?
Well, mental doctor. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. I thought you meant you're seeing something on the list. Okay. The first one is, are you seeing physical exhaustion?
No, I'm in the best shape of my life. Next.
Never like at the end of a day being like, oh, man, I am exhausted.
I mean, occasionally I work some late nights or something, but man up. I'm fine.
All right.
Is that denial? Is that what I just did?
I don't know. I think as long as you're not feeling it all the time, you're probably golden. Oh, we're always going to feel it if you're working hard, you know.
Yes. Okay.
How about are you having any digestive issues?
Well, I mean, not anymore. I did throughout my 20s and 30s and 40s. I had some level of IBS that, I don't know, it's because I changed my diet or gotten in shape. I don't think it's stress management, but, you know, mainly those have gone away.
Okay.
How are you answering these things, by the way?
Physical exhaustion, no. I mean, just like you said, I mean, sometimes I go to bed exhausted, but I'm not like, oh, man.
Yeah.
I was digging a ditch all day, right. You know, and digestive issues. No, I don't have an issue with it. Okay. Detachment or isolation. Are you detaching yourself from anything or isolating yourself?
Well, I mean, on one level, like I just said, I spent about 10 hours a day alone in a studio, but you know, we've been doing that our entire careers and that's just part of that thing. But otherwise, no. I think I've gone out of my way to find romantic relationships, and I have a great relationship with my kids and with you. And so, no, I don't feel like I'm isolating myself. I have from some losers out there, but not from those actually.
Sure. Sometimes it's healthy. I mean, and here's the other way to look at that, too. Like, sometimes, well, like you working in that studio, sometimes do you look forward to being in there by yourself, doing your own thing?
Every
detaching
day.
From the world a little bit and just doing your own shit.
Yeah. I mean, I'm an introvert by nature and extrovert professionally, but I like the fact that our careers have allowed us to be alone in little studios, but then we connect with the masses through it. But I would much rather be alone in a studio than in cubicle hell or working in some gigantic corporation with 10,000 employees on the campus.
Yeah. So that's a healthy one, I think. I mean, you're not avoiding social interaction. You're seeking it out. So I think you're fine. No. And
so far, I'm bulletproof is what I'm learning from this.
Well, we're not very far on the list.
I don't pass out and shit myself at the end of the day. So
I'm so tired. Okay. How about, do you have increased irritability?
The fuck you say to me?
Do you
increased
ever
irritability? I don't know. On some levels, yeah, I feel like that's the result of politics and life beating the crap out of me. My 40s have been miserable. I mean, So irritability, has it increased in some ways? I've also gotten very good at stress management, and antidepressants probably don't hurt either. So,
well, yeah, that's something you can also think about, because like we think about burnout in our jobs, but you know, a lot of us right now are politically burnt out. Yes. You can be politically burnt out. You can be burnt out in a relationship. There's all kinds of different facets you could be burned out in. I guess it's not just professionally. So you have some irritability.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know how you have a pulse and age in this world and probably don't have some increased level of irritability. Do some people get older and get more mellow? Maybe when we hit like 70 or something. But.
Maybe. I don't know. Or it depends how much pot you're smoking, I think.
Right. I feel like the more you learn about this world, the more you have to be becoming increasingly irritable.
Completely. I mean, I don't think I'm an irritable person, but if I compare myself 49-year-old Nick to 30-year-old Nick and 20-year-old Nick, I'm far more irritable than I was, you know?
Yeah, that's fair. But look at someone like our former producer. I know he was like 3 years older or something, but whew, that guy was irritable at everything. Like, that's what I think they're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, too. All right, let's move on to the next one. This is called brain fog. Do you ever have any brain fog?
Well, yes, but I have been struggling of late. Is brain fog age-related, pot-related? Do I have some genetic thing going on where I'm in the early stages of dementia or something? Or am I just overthinking it? Because in my 20s, I can remember blanking on, you know, who started Beverly Hills Cop. Like, I don't know. It's really hard to gauge. I don't think I'm in a fog in general. But sometimes I brain fart and I wonder, like, oh, I'm getting old, or oh, I'm smoking too much pot in my whole life. Like,
sure.
That's hard to gauge. I don't feel like I'm just in a fog in general, though. How could we sit here and do a show like this?
Exactly. Okay. I feel like I have some brain fog, too. And I don't feel like it's due to burnout, though. I think I can make that call because I know I'm not burning myself out. If I felt like I was working so hard that I needed to watch myself from burnout, maybe I would say, like, yeah, I got some brain fog from that. But I got brain fog from being an older guy, dude.
Right. I wonder if Rachel and Kennedy would agree with anything we're saying right now. Like, you two are definitely brain fog. You two are definitely irritable.
You
two are.
You should check. Why don't we check and we'll reveal, you know, yeah, to each other. Okay. What about negative expectations of the future?
Well, I mean, a phrase that I have learned in therapy and brought to the show is future tripping. You know, like, what if something bad, what if it had to go, what if this person does that? Like, it's a fine line between planning for the future and dreading it or overthinking it.
Yeah.
So am I future tripping all the time? No. But am I prone to doing it? Somewhat. But life has also taught me that things don't always go the way you thought they were, or they don't always have happy endings.
Well, I think that's healthy, is just to be aware of that. But this is saying expectations. So do you expect your future to be negative?
No, I assume there's a possibility, but I don't expect it. No. Right.
There's always a possibility that negativity or something negative can creep in at any moment. I mean, that's just life. But yeah, I wouldn't see that in you, and I don't see it in myself. So
I almost think it would be unhealthy to just assume everything's rosy and great. It'll always be that way. Like, you're setting yourself up for heartache in that world.
Yes. Yeah, there's a balance that you need to find so you're a part of reality. Do you feel hopeless at all?
No. I mean, again, I've been through some shit in my 40s, and I was severe clinical depression for a while. But that's when I ended up homeless and financially destroyed and got screwed over by someone I was engaged to. And I mean, so yeah, there was some darkness. And when I got divorced, same kind of thing. But as a general rule, and certainly right now, no, not at all.
Okay. Yeah, all those things that you just described, I think that's normal, right, to feel that kind of stuff. So
yeah, going through those things.
Yeah.
If you're just a Eeyore in general, Debbie Downer all the time, that's right. That's probably heading to burnout, yeah.
Do you have increased anxiety?
I mean, every day when I read the news.
I mean, what about in life?
Well, I mean, the older you get, the more you do have responsibilities. I have some level of anxiety about that, but I definitely don't feel like I'm anxiety-ridden by any means, no.
But you don't have to take anything for it. You're not drinking for it. You're not smoking pot specifically to get rid of anxiety. You're not taking a pill.
I don't know. What time is it? What day of the week are you talking about? Like, listen, there are some days where at the end of the day, I'm like, yeah, I could use a cocktail. Like, this has been quite a day. But every day, am I trying to drown my sorrows or my anxiety? Like, no, definitely not. And I struggle with that, too. Like, there are some times where I think it's perfectly acceptable to smoke a bowl or have a cocktail because, man, this has been a hard day. I just want to detox.
Sure. Yeah.
And I don't know where the line is, where now is a problem, other than the classic definition of if you're not able to maintain jobs, relationships, pay your bills, then, yeah, it's a big problem then.
Yeah. Is it making you irresponsible? No. So I think you're okay. I feel like I'm the same. Feeling cynical or apathetic?
Boy, I feel like if we take Trump out of any of these questions, my answer is no. But given who, the state of politics, yeah, I feel cynical for sure.
You definitely don't feel apathetic, though. I can diagnose you with that.
Yeah, opposite of that. So.
Yeah, so feeling cynical, I think that's what a good portion of this country is feeling all of this right now. So I don't think you have to worry about that.
Yeah. And there are things, by the way, that my therapist will tell me are situationally appropriate answers. In other words, like if you're in a trauma recovery, on a scale of 1 to 10, is your anxiety ever going to be 1? No, you're never going to forget about all that stuff. Or you're always like, so you try to get it to something that's situationally appropriate. Get it down to a 3 out of 10. You're never going to get it to a 1 out of 10. So with things going on in the world right now, is it situationally appropriate to have some level of anxiety?
What is your go-to when you have anxiety? In learning to deal with it, do you meditate? If you're feeling extra anxious, do you have steps that you take to bring yourself back down?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's what are they?
Shots of Jack Daniels and sports of Ritalin. And, playing guitar is a big one. Riding the dirt bike for me is a big one. Giving myself permission to just watch a movie, like unplugging from things. And I think a lot of that has come from a lot of the stuff I've gone through where I've realized there's some of this anxiety and stress that is simply not okay. So you just got to find ways to hit pause and doing things that are creative, like guitar, physical, like dirt bike or going on a hike or something. Like that's become my balance. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's good that you have that, dude. This is the last one I'll ask you about. It's called not enjoying your personal or professional life, no matter what you're doing.
No, I mean, listen, for better or for worse, I decided years ago that I want to be in a career where if I wake up every day and dread going to work, then you've made an epically bad decision in life. So I've always tried to do things that are creative, whether it's music or radio or any of these things we're doing, this podcast. I don't dread my job at all. There are stresses to come along with it. But I feel like that's a red flag. If you wake up, you're just like, I don't want to go to the office. I dread going back to the factory. Like, then you've made some bad choices. Now, my career choices have led to career up and downs and money issues here and there and stuff. But no, I don't dread my professional life. And there have been windows where I dread my personal life. And I've learned now that those should have been gigantic red flags. So, no, now, my personal life is the one of the highlights. Whereas, times in my life it was bad, and I had to learn that lesson the very hard way.
I want to say also that I think that it's normal because I feel the same way you do. Like, I look forward to a lot of aspects of my job, but we all have those days where we're like, ugh, I just don't want to do it today. Some of that is normal. I just don't, and then you get up, you get moving and, you talk yourself into it. Every time, there's been times that I've come to this podcast and I know you too. We have so many outside factors in our life coming that let's do the podcast. And then by the time that open hits, we're both just like, it's almost like a breath. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. For sure. And part of this is because I have forced some balance. Like we mentioned, I got a bunch of different little projects going on, but I have told myself that some of them on Saturday and Sunday, it is not happening. I'm not going to do it. I don't care what's going on in the news cycle. I just have decided. Because in my older days, I used to be 24/7 grinding away up early, up late, and that became too much. So I have put some forced roadblocks or parameters on things.
Yeah. You got to do it. Burnout's a real deal. You know, like I was saying earlier, about 34% of the country is approaching or in the midst of burnout. I guess this survey was taken in the UK, but I would imagine if that's 34% in the UK, that it would be a higher number here. They say, you know, like we've talked about all throughout this topic, you should go talk to somebody about how to release some of this stuff, because you don't have to get to a point in your life where you're burning yourself out and just feel like, oh, this is where I am. Like, you could always take steps to change your situation. And sometimes that's just talking to a therapist. Sometimes that's reading a book, so listening to a book, or talking to a friend. But like, you should definitely not be like, yeah, this is where I am now.
Yeah. What have we said repeatedly on the show when talking about relationships or partying or whatever it is? What is the key to life?
Life is like a bicycle. You got to find that balance, dude, right?
Balance, yes. I thought it was like a bicycle. It really hurts if the seat's not on.
Yeah, that's just for the next 3.5 years.
Yes. So. Balance. Everything in life is about balance. The good is about balance just as much as the bad is.
Yeah, and it can be hard to find that balance, but that's why we reach out and ask for help once in a while, right?
Exactly. I think everyone definitely struggles with that. So, yeah, I mean, discussions like this are good, bouncing things off peers, coworkers, friends, you know, like, you know, it is all about balance. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, you keep working. I don't think you're nearing burnout now. I'll keep my eye on you. If you watch me, I'll watch you, and we'll be okay.
That sounds a little dirty, but okay. I'm down for it.
I'm all down for dirty, and so is this podcast. Thanks for listening to The Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve.
Yeah, find our social media stuff. It's fun. It's interactive. You can comment, you can like, you can share. YouTube, Reddit, TikTok, those are the big ones, and we're on all the other ones, too.
Call our comment line, 844-48-VOCAL. Until next time.
Hey, guys, it's Zuckerberg. That wraps up another episode of The Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve. Don't forget, the guys give you 2 podcasts every week. And also, don't forget, I'm a huge frickin' nerd. I don't even like myself. I know you don't like me. I gotta get back into therapy. Bye.
Burning out.
See? He gets it.